This is really awesome. And full disclaimer, we're recording this on the Wednesday after the closing ceremonies of the Olympics. And two-time Olympian Tricia Mangan, Narden grad, Hollymont, Buffalo, so proud of her, is with us. Obviously, downhill skier, finished 11th. That's 11th in the world, folks, in that particular event she was in Beijing, and joins us now from where in Italy?
Saraga. It's in the Trentino region.
Okay, sure. I'll have to get a map when we're done with this and figure out
Thank
where that is. Wow, this is so cool you're here. Congratulations, obviously, on being a two-time Olympian. Do you still
you.
pinch yourself for being able to say that? Because so few people can say that.
Yeah, I don't think it's really sunk in. There's no pinching going on. Maybe there will be one day.
Hey, so I was thinking about this in terms of travel. So, like, to get to China and the Olympics, do you guys travel as a team, like on a charter, on a private jet? Do you fly solo, commercial? Like, how does it work?
I joined the US ski team before, and then we had like a mini quarantine, and then we flew on a charter plane. So actually, I don't know what percentage. Most of the flights to China were a charter plane, especially the ones going from Europe. There were a couple regular planes through like Japan. Like people flew the US to Tokyo, Tokyo too. But yeah, most of them were charter.
I'm just going to jump to this question, and I have a million questions to ask you. But did you ever think when you were a little kid that skiing was going to allow you to see the world like you have? I mean, how incredible is that?
Yeah, that's actually my favorite part. I think I've like just started to appreciate that this year, how unbelievable it is. I've actually been to China, but to ski there was so crazy, and no one, like so few people have seen that because the hill was brand new. So yeah, I feel very lucky, and I don't think I ever thought about that as a kid, no.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it's crazy cool is what it is. So okay, how was China? I mean, how was the food? How was the Olympic Village? I know you competed near the end of the games, so like, what did you do with your downtime if you weren't training? All that.
Yeah. I tell people it was kind of like a mix between like summer camp and college because we stayed in the village. And in the first Olympics, I didn't stay in the village, so that was a totally new experience. Like the residential units were kind of like a college dorm room. You had your like long hall, and then there was a room with two twin beds and this like little common area and another room. There was a dining hall, and we didn't do much other than we would train, we'd come back, we would hang out in the Team USA room. There's lots of snacks, and you could watch other events together, go to the dining hall, do like your workout, your recovery, hang out in other people's rooms. So yeah, it was very college-like. But the days flew by. I'm not quite sure why, but they flew by very, very quickly.
So you're in these common areas, you're in other people's rooms. Are you just like shooting the breeze? Are you playing like, Uno or like,
When we were hanging out like with other Team USA athletes in the room, we were just kind of hanging out. I mean, I know all the girls, so we're good friends. When we were in the Team USA room, it was like with the in my village it was alpine and then bobsled, luge, skeleton. So we got to meet some of those athletes. And then there was also in the village like a game room area, which was kind of fun. There are like pool tables and ping pong and like a virtual reality room. So that was the most hangout it got, which was definitely not your typical Olympics. But that's okay.
Now, so my podcast is called Bull in the Basement. So obviously you were playing basement games, kind of sort of, right? So
Yes,
you,
exactly.
right. So, and you guys are like ridiculously competitive. Were you that competitive playing pool and ping pong amongst each other?
Yeah, I feel like we are probably more competitive than your average group of people, but not to like a detrimental effect. No, it's all fun and games.
What are your favorite Winter Olympic sports to watch if you could pick out one or two?
I really liked watching freestyle skiing this year because it's really cool, especially the women's event has progressed so much. So it was really fun to watch that. And then I also love figure skating just because it's like so unbelievable what they do so far from like what I do. And Nordic skiing, I have so much respect for those athletes. So yeah, they're a lot better fun to watch though.
Who is the best non-skier Olympic friend you have?
Non-alpine skiing?
Yeah.
One of the girls on the Nordic team I went to school with, Julia Kern, we actually were roommates our first term together, and then we just graduated together in June. So,
no kidding.
Yeah, we're super close. I'm a huge fan of hers.
All right, so you mentioned Nordic skiing. What other Olympic events are you in awe of? Like I'm watching the aerial skiing and I'm like, those guys and girls are out of their minds. Like I would die. Game's over if I attempt that, right? So like what other, I mean, you mentioned figure skating and the things they can do with their quads and all of that, but like what other athletic events were you sort of in awe of?
Yeah. Anything that they're inverted, I'm just, yeah. It would also be game over for me. So, but like speed skating is unreal. Their quads are so strong. So I think they're all really cool. I also think that I have a little bit of an appreciation for how much time and commitment it takes to get to that level. So even the ones I don't fully understand, I'm still have so much respect for all those athletes.
For sure. I have to ask, do you have an Olympic rings tattoo? And if not, will one be coming?
I don't, and I don't think so. And if I did get one, I most certainly would not tell my father.
All right, that's good to know. You mentioned skiing in China. You had never skied China before. You said it was brand new hill. So let's analyze it. Like, how was the course? And this is a silly question from somebody that has never, ever been really a good skier or fairly competitive in skiing, but like, how do the courses in the snow and the conditions differ from, you can even say continent to continent, right? From Asia, where you've skied now multiple times, to Europe, where you are now, to even here in the States, if you're skiing in Vermont or Colorado, like how do those course conditions and courses change, and how do you have to alter your own game in terms of attacking them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there are a couple factors. The first is the snow. And this is actually my first time skiing in Asia and everyone's first time skiing in Beijing because there wasn't a test event because of coronavirus. So the snow was actually pretty unique because it was 100% man-made. So that was the biggest challenge for people to get used to. It was a lot harder for some people than others. But they did like such an amazing job with all of the hill prep. So it was really, really good. It was just different, which was the hard part. And then the hill itself, was also fantastic. It was very challenging. So sometimes, you might think like at the Olympics, it's not quite as hard of a hill, but it was like each event, there were tons of steep sections, like rolls, and the downhill there are lots of jumps. So the hill itself was so cool. And then the courses are kind of more based on the hill. So the courses don't really play a huge effect. It's more like the hill, the steepness, and the snow. Yeah.
That was a good explanation. So I have to get to an elephant in the room, Michaela Schifrin, obviously your teammate who you know so well. And everyone watched her first runs, obviously in complete disbelief. And you saw her reaction as well. And you were, I'm sure, as heartbroken as every fan was, and certainly she was, you know, in analyzing what happened and in talking to her. Was it something simple? Was it something difficult? Was it something that she had or you had ever encountered before? Like how did those things kind of happen?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. A lot of people are asking that. First of all, I am actually racing independent, so I haven't really been around the ski team, so I wouldn't really consider myself her teammate, but I do know her and obviously interacted with her at the Olympics. I don't really want to like overspeak on her behalf. I don't really know what happened. I think that there's just so much pressure on individuals like her who are expected to win at the Olympics. And I mean, we race like every year all winter long. And it just feels a lot different when like the entire world is watching just for the Olympics. So I think that's obviously a very hard thing to manage. And yeah, it was very heartbreaking, but she's an unbelievable skier. So I'm sure she will bounce back very quickly.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get back to you and your skiing. So you're in the gate, you're ready to go. What's in your head? Like, what are you feeling? What are you thinking before you get that countdown 3-1 or whatever it is before that gate opens, you fly down that hill? What are you thinking? What's going through your brain?
Yeah. This is a very important part of my like prep and work is my mental state. And I try to, as much as possible, just think about the skiing. So in downhill, you have training runs, so you know how the course runs. So you visualize like exactly how you think it's going to feel and the line you want to do. But yeah, when I'm in the gate, I'm just trying to think about like the skiing and what I need to think about to have good skiing and the line, and try not to think about any of the noise or distractions or, oh my gosh, I'm at the Olympics.
Is there a deep breath like before you go? Is there like this sort of, I don't know, zen-ish relaxation moment before you go? Or
Yeah, I have like a warm-up, and I definitely try to like stay calm right before like when the couple races before me are going. And then before I go, I do try to get like a little bit hyped up, get the blood running and stuff. Because yeah, I think that skiing aggressive is very good for me. So I try to get a little bit more aggressive.
Do you leaderboard watch at all and think of a time you need to get, or do you just go and do your thing?
So I do watch, they have, like the live stream, but I'm not really looking at their times. I'm more looking at how they're skiing just mm-hmm. to see the track, like how the track is running
right.
and stuff. I wouldn't really change my plan if like someone came in the lead by a second or something. So it's less about the time and more just like trying to learn as much as I can, much information as possible about the course.
Are you superstitious at all? I mean, do you have a lucky charm that you wear every time you ski or anything like that?
No, maybe I should get one.
Hey, listen, you're an Olympian. You're damn good. So, I mean, if you want to achieve higher and greater, that's on you, but whatever, man. What parts of your body suffer the most, and how quick is recovery after doing a run, you know, in competition? Is there ice baths involved and massages and cupping and cryo and stuff like that? Or is it not that extreme? You train hard enough and well enough to have your body in a place where you maybe don't need that much recovery?
Yeah. That's a great question. It kind of depends. I, knock on wood, have been very lucky with injuries. So what I do is pretty much just like injury prevention, and after the race, like depending on how many days we're skiing or how the training was, I'll either do like a flush, definitely some core every day, maybe a little bit of a lift. If we have a day off, then we'll do a bigger lift. But if you have injuries, then you would do more like PT specific stuff on the injuries, like sports massages or kind of work on that one area. But yeah, I try to do like full body, just injury prevention, strength, recovery stuff.
Are you on any type of a hardcore diet?
I wouldn't say hardcore, but I've definitely been a lot more conscious this season about remaining consistent with what I'm eating, and also eating a lot more protein than I have in the past, just to maintain muscle mass throughout the season.
Let's now switch over to your career as a 2-year-old. So for skiing to get to your level and to have, I guess, an early comfortability with it, was it kind of like you know, when kids are babies, they'll throw them in the pool. Here, just go and save yourself and learn how to swim instinctively. Is it kind of like that when you're 2 years old and mom and dad put you on the boards and they say, go? Was that what it was like for you? Or was it a little bit different? Did it take some adjustment and some confidence building to really start enjoying it and obviously find out that you were going to be pretty good at it?
I think you'd have to ask my parents what my first run was like when I was two. I don't remember. But I think that with skiing in general growing up, my parents did a really nice job of like giving us a lot of opportunities, but kind of leaving like it in our hands for how we wanted to pursue them or to what extent and extreme. So yeah, I definitely skied a lot when I was younger at Hallimont, but I don't think that I really like took it to the next level until I was a bit older and aware of like, oh, like I really want to be good at this. Yeah, I'm not sure if that answers the question. But,
But that leads me to my next question. So what was that moment? Like, when did you figure out that, holy cow, I'm really good at this and I could go, you know, here and then here and then here. And eventually, I mean, you got to the Olympics, my God, you don't get much better than that. But anyway, what do you remember that time? Or were there a couple of times when you're maybe a teenager and you thought, wow, I'm really good. And maybe somebody else was telling you the same thing, that you can be great if, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There were a couple times. Definitely when I was like growing up, it was I never really thought like, whoa, I'm really good. I just really wanted to get better, like to beat the boys, to beat my brother. And so when I was, so I think that it just kind of comes from my nature of being like pretty competitive and liking skiing a lot. So wanting to be better at it. But then a big moment for me was when I went to U16 Nationals when I was a freshman in high school, and I got absolutely crushed. And I remember thinking like, okay, like I want to come back here next year and actually do well and like actually have a chance, because I was like, me coming from like little small town Ellicottville, New York, and all these girls who I knew were way better than me and skied all year round. But I was like, okay, I want to come back next year and like actually be a competitor. And then I remember working like very, very hard that year. And it was kind of in my mind that like, this is the goal. So I think that was a big turning point for me. But I never was like, oh, I know I'm good. I could be great. It was more like, I want to be good, so I'm going to work to be good. And yeah, it's more like that.
So you obviously have become really good at it. You're a World Cupper, mm-hmm. obviously. You're an Olympian, obviously. This is just a weird question, and you can answer it however you wish. But I think a lot of people probably wonder, you know, professionally, in terms of pro sports, World Cup, whatever, like what kind of bank can a skier make? I mean, can you make a really, really good living? Can you get rich off skiing? Like, how is this something that you can do for a long time? And then like, then you can use your mechanical engineering degree if you need to.
Yeah. If you're Michaela Shiffrin, you can make a lot of money. Unfortunately for me this year, I am paying a lot of money because I am not on the national team. So all my expenses are out of pocket, but it's kind of a pretty steep exponential curve in ski racing. Like the best, or maybe like the top five in the world, are making a lot. And I'd say like maybe the top like 30 in the world, if you're on your national team, definitely sustaining yourself good living. And then if you're a little bit outside the 30 or not on your national team, then it is quite expensive. but I had a fundraiser this year, and I have a lot of amazing partners and sponsors. So I'm super, super appreciative of that, because I definitely couldn't do this without their help. So yeah, it took a village to get here, but I'm thankful. And I do believe that, with a little bit more time, that I can be competitive enough to provide
Yeah. So what's the lifespan of a skier typically? You're 24, right? Like, can you go to 34? Can you go to like, is that even in your brain, or is that something you're thinking about?
That's a great and somewhat controversial question, because in the US, the US ski team kind of says, like, once you're over the age of 21, if you're not scoring World Cup points, then you're too old. But there's been a lot of talk about how that model is a little bit wrong, because there are skiers that are a lot older that are still doing really well. Like this year, there was a guy who won the World Cup. I think he was 40, like a men's slalom skier and a downhiller skier. So like both sides of the spectrum. People don't start peaking until like 27, 28, unless you're like a phenom like Michaela. I feel very confident that my fastest years are ahead of me. Otherwise I wouldn't still be racing, but it kind of depends on their body and the injuries and if they still love it. So, yeah.
Can you recreationally ski? Like just kind of, you know, just kind of glide down here. Is it always got to be? Do you always have to be going 70 miles an hour, or can you just kind of glide down and maybe?
No, it's fun to take some runs, unbuckle the boots, just cruise. It's very fun. I can do that.
Do you ever snowboard? Have you ever half piped? Will we ever see you in a Warren Miller movie and, you know, 2 feet of fresh powder jumping off cliffs? Is that something that we would ever see you do? I mean, obviously that could threaten your current situation, clearly, if something happened in any one of those events. But any of those things you like to do or have done?
I think I've snowboarded twice. And coming from Western New York, I'm not a very good powder skier, nor have I done it much, but it is so much fun. And I definitely would absolutely love to like do more big mountain stuff. That's like kind of a whole nother world. That is super fun. And a lot of skiers, I mean, being a racer takes a lot of technical skills. So the transition to big mountain skiing if people want to do that, isn't super challenging.
I think. Can you put into words what it's like going down a hill 70 miles an hour?
I think it's not as scary as people think, because I watch other Olympic events and I am like, how that's terrifying. We're like talking to the luge or skeleton athletes.
Right.
But they think what we do is terrifying. So I think that sometimes I do get scared, but most of the time I'm not really thinking about it in that way.
You can't, right? How could you, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
To excel the way you have. So would you consider yourself sort of daredevilish? I mean, are there things that like, have you bungee jumped? Do you want to bungee jump? I don't know. Have you rappelled down the, you know, a 20 story building? Like, are these things that you would, that wouldn't faze you or no?
Yeah, I wouldn't have said so maybe like a year ago, but I think I definitely am. I have bungee jumped. I love cliff jumping into water. But yeah, my dad pointed out to me about a year ago that I don't have a governor at all, and I need to be more careful. So yes, I do think I would, or other people would, characterize me as a bit of a daredevil.
So you're a recent college grad. Congratulations, Dartmouth.
Thank you.
So you are an elite athlete and elite smart. So tell me something simple, something every day that you aren't good at.
So many things. I'm actually kind of klutzy, believe it or not, but I'm klutzy, but I'm also good at regaining my balance. So I don't know. There are lots of things I'm not good at. Just ask any one of my siblings.
And they're first to, and they're like answering like that, right? I know how it's like coming from a band of brothers and sisters. I know how that is. So obviously World Cup. So mechanical engineering, why that? And are you looking to build like, you know, state-of-the-art snowmaking machines or state-of-the-art chairlifts or something and keep it in skiing, or like, what do you want to do with that?
That's a great question. I have always really, really loved math, and I'm kind of like hands-on problem solver type of person. So engineering just was super fun and made a lot of sense. And I don't know exactly what I want to do. There are a lot of things in biomedical engineering that interest me. Recently, I talked last year with a company that's designing environmentally friendly, like sustainable material skis. They were looking for some help. So I think that it's cool. There are so many different problems and ideas and projects to work on. So I don't know yet, but I think there are a lot of exciting things out there.
For sure. All right. What do you miss about home?
a lot. I think it's just nice to go back to your home and feel like totally relaxed and like have all your little creature comforts, because I wouldn't even say I'm someone who like is that invested or like that attached to things at all, but going home and sleeping in my own bed is very nice, and having my mom cook food and yeah. So the little simple things.
Fair enough. Yeah, I was going to ask you what restaurant would we find you in if you were in Buffalo, or what food would we find you eating if you were back home?
We don't really go out to eat that much, but we do love the Grange in Hamburg.
Sure. Yeah,
that's like the one restaurant my family will go out to eat.
Farm to table, good stuff there for sure.
Yeah,
and clearly you are showing your love for the Bills. You're wearing your Bills sweatshirt as we speak in Italy, which is super cool. So clearly you've been following them and are a big fan. Are you? I've only seen this really in the last couple of, maybe the last 5 years. But man, like anytime I've traveled, like, you know, somebody's from Buffalo because they're wearing Buffalo gear, me included. Are you that person where you're walking around with a Bills t-shirt, you're walking around with a Sabres t-shirt, or you're walking around with something Buffalo and somebody's like, oh, you're from Buffalo? I mean, in that conversation comes up. Are you that person?
Yeah, a little bit. When I first made the team, they used to call me Buffalo Trish just because it was funny that I was from Buffalo, because no one's really from there in the ski world.
Right.
That definitely came with like Bills Mafia and being a Bills fan and stuff. So I do have like a little bit of a reputation in the ski world, and the like with all my friends. But I wear the sweatshirt all the time. Very proud. And it is super cool when you meet someone like all the way across the world and they have some connection to Buffalo. It happens a lot more than you think.
I've had it happen to myself in a lot of weird places too. Just a stupid aside, I was on my honeymoon in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I strike up a conversation with the waiter who has been a California Hawaii kid like his whole life. I tell him what I do for a living. He's like, the Bills are my favorite team. I love the Bills. Like, I wake up at 9 o'clock in the morning, whatever time it is in Hawaii, when the Bills are on, and I watch them every single, like, craziness. Hawaii, of all places.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Random, right? Just random craziness. Well, listen, please say hello to folks. Like, this is obviously going to go viral. So anybody you want to say hello to, do it.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I would love to say hello to some people. Hello to all of the people that watched. Thank you so much. And the people who have supported me this season and helped me get here. I don't have enough words to say thank you. And then obviously the Hollymont, Malikaville community and Narden and Buffalo in general. I'm very, very proud and thankful to come from such an amazing community. I think that's really shaped who I am and has helped me get here. So hello to everyone, I guess.
Yeah, and certainly plug anybody that you're involved with in terms of charities or non-for-profits. Feel free to give them shouts out too, if you want.
I don't have a lot of money to be giving, but I do. There are so many amazing nonprofits in the skiing world, like the Kelly Brush Foundation and High Fives, if my younger brother has been a huge part of. So yeah, those are two very amazing. And there are also a lot of the other volunteer work I've done or companies I've worked with have been in Boston and New York City, getting underprivileged kids access to skiing, which I think is so cool. I think that spreading the love of skiing is very important to me. So any way to do that is really great.
Well, the two times I ever went skiing was, memorable, but for the wrong reasons. So like I got real ballsy and I decided, you know, screw the lesson, screw the bunny hill. I'm just going to go to the top. And so I get off the chairlift and I go, and I'm going, and I am just flying.
So you did the throw them into the swimming pool method.
Yeah, basically. So I'm flying and they got the snake of like 3-year-olds traversing the hill, and I'm going, I don't know how fast I was going. I was probably going 15 miles an hour and I thought I was going 100. So I probably wasn't even going that fast, but I'm going to kill people if I keep going. So I literally blow up. It's a lawn sale. Guys are going down next to me laughing their ass off. That's the funniest thing I've ever seen, blah, blah, blah. Put myself back together, get down to the bottom of the hill, decide I'm going to go try it again. This time I get on the chairlift and I had rentals and I dropped one of my poles. I'm like, oh my God, this is my first time skiing. Now I got to go down with one pole. And I'm also freaking out because I'm like, I'm never going to find that pole. I'm going to have to pay a lot of money because I lost the pole and blah, blah, blah. So I get up to the top and that same thing happens again. I'm about murder 4 baby children with my giant fat body going down the hill with ridiculous speeds. And I bite it again and it's a yard sale. And that's my skiing story.
Did you find your pole?
No.
You didn't?
No. And they were cool about it. They're like, it happens all the time. No big deal. I'm like, okay.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, it is really annoying for us, or like it is a big challenge when there are those people traversing all the way across the hill. So that's not just a you thing. That's a big challenge for anyone.
Oh, oh, thank you. Coming from you, I feel so much better now, and I'm so much more proud of myself. Hey, continued success. Thank you so much for doing this. This is great. I'm so happy for you and everything you've done and you're going to do. And we're going to follow your World Cup. And how long does the World Cup season last, by the way, for people that don't know?
So I only have one more race, okay. March 5th. Yeah. But then there's non-World Cup races too. So the season will go until April, but cool. One more World Cup.
And just people can follow your, whatever you're doing online, just Google your name and they can find out how you're faring.
Yeah. I have a website, trishamangan.org. Yep. And a Substack, a blog that's linked to that, and my Instagram and everything. So yeah, cool. Hopefully it's easy to find.
Awesome. So we're going to get done with this. I'm going to get you a link that you can use however you want. You put it on your website, you can put it on your Instagram, you can put it on your Twitter, whatever you want to do. Or you can put it nowhere if you're ashamed. That's fine. I get that all the time. I'm a mediocre interviewer.
I'm not ashamed.
But I appreciate you doing this. This has been so much fun. Again, congratulations. And we'll be watching.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It was really fun talking.
Yeah, you bet. Take care.
Have a good night.
You too.
Or day.
You too.